It's Tuesday at 8 p.m. and you're listening to The Best Possible Taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
You're listening to The Best Possible Taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
Good evening and you are very welcome to The Best Possible Taste, Ireland's longest running food and drink radio show and podcast. I'm Sharon Noonan and tonight's show is a celebration of Taste Causeway, an all-island foodie destination award winner and an accredited slow food destination in Northern Ireland. And I was delighted to be a guest there recently. I met a number of fantastic people, including my first guest, Mark Rogers, who is a storyteller and guide.
Bon appetit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious.
Mark, you're very welcome to The Best Possible Taste. I had the pleasure of meeting you on a visit by Taste Causeway that I was a guest on recently. And I found out on that visit that we have your lovely wife to thank for bringing you to the North Antrim coast, because that's not where you come from originally, but it's very much the part of Northern Ireland that you now call home.
Yes, it was a pleasure to have you on that trip, Sharon. Thank you very much for your support. And you're right, the whole thing is Rosemary's fault. When I met Rosemary, that brought me to Portrush, and not only did I fall in love with Rosemary, I fell in love with her family and the area and their history and their heritage. And yeah, that was definitely the key figure for me being involved in doing what we do.
And it was herself and her father, your father-in-law, that really instilled in you a sense of pride about that part of Northern Ireland. And that has brought you into the world of guiding now. So tell me about your guiding business and how you got it started.
Well, you're right, Rosemary and her daddy, the late William John Purdy, were the inspiration. William John Purdy was from Lisnagunyuk, and he was a very quietly spoken wee man with a beautiful Ulster Scots accent. He was a great storyteller, absolutely great storyteller. And he loved telling you stories about his childhood and his daddy, who was a guide in the Causeway. And he became my guide on the Giant's Causeway. And he was the inspiration behind us starting Dalry Ada Kingdom Tours 8 years ago. And he still is the inspiration for me today. Without him, we wouldn't have anything. So William John and Rosemary were the key figures in it. And I suppose I fell in love with it myself, and I fell in love with the history and the heritage and the authenticity of what we do, and the sheer craftsmanship of being a storyteller. And I think those things are still inextricably linked to our brands.
In that particular region, having grown up not too far away from it, whenever we had visitors, there was always three places that you took them to. You took them to the Giant's Causeway, to Carrickaread Rope Bridge, and Bushmills Distillery. Whenever we talk about food tourism, food and drink tourism, like Bushmills is an institution in Northern Ireland whenever it comes to food and drink tourism.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. It's an iconic brand. Everybody in Northern Ireland and Ireland and globally is aware of Irish whiskey, and the two brands they know are Jameson and Bushmills. So it is an iconic brand, there's no doubt. And the other sites you mentioned are inextricably linked with food as well. Fishermen on the Causeway and Carrickaread wouldn't have existed without the salmon fishing industry. So they're all inextricably linked to food and drink.
Unfortunately, on the day that I was there, it was too windy to cross Carrickaread, but I have done it many times since I was a child. And my most recent visit to it, it's such a safe passage across now compared to the way it would have been years ago. Now, a lot of people don't believe me about that, because, like, obviously we bounced over it as children, and there were no parents worried about us falling over, which you really could have done 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's very much a safer experience now. And we wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the goodwill and the trust instilled on us by the National Trust, and indeed by Tourism Northern Ireland and within Taste Causeway. So it's the power of collaboration that has us there at Carrickaread. And we tell a wonderful story of the fishermen, of the industry. And the key to that particular tour is the fact that we go beyond the bridge. Once you cross the bridge, we have sole access to the little cottage on the island, and it's in there that we take our guests and tell the stories of salmon fishing. It is the most magical experience. The atmosphere inside the cottage, if you have the fire going and the wood's crackling, and there's an energy to it and the whole story, and you're looking out at the scene and the bay and the cliffs. Calgary's a magical place, there's no doubt about that. We're very blessed.
Tell the listeners about the history to Carrickmacross and the rope bridge, because you mentioned the fishermen and the salmon fishing, because that's why they constructed the bridge hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, without the salmon fishing industry, the bridge would not exist. And believe it or not, Sharna goes as far back as the year 1755. That's when the very first bridge was actually crossed the chasm to access the island and fish in the bay below for salmon. And then it decided that amongst the fishermen they needed somewhere to shelter and to store their equipment. So it took them nearly 30 years, but eventually they managed to create what's known as the fishery. And you and I know that as the little cottage on the island. And they opened it in 1784. And the big thing about those dates is when you're talking to an American guest who has this Irish ancestry and is romantically involved with the island, and you're saying, touch those walls there and imagine the very first bridge was built before you had a country. That real, authentic history resonates really strongly with them, you know, and creates this emotional connection. And that's why we do what we do. We want to connect people emotionally to us and our history and our heritage. And that's what it's all about.
I loved the place that we visited in Ballycastle, because I would have told you on the trip that I have very fond memories of going to the Lammas Fair in Ballycastle every August. And Ballycastle is so different, like the Carrickmacross Rope Bridge. Ballycastle is so different now in terms of the lovely eateries and along the seafront there, the lovely playground and everything. And we paid a visit to Urtha Minor.
Yes, the thing that strikes me most about Ballycastle as you walk around the town, you don't see chain stores. There's no Dorothy Perkins or KFC or McDonald's or any other of those big brand names. And that quirkiness connects the local community to the town. You walk around and you see the family names above the doors of the shops. And you know when you're in the shops and you're in the hotels and you're in Urtha Minor and you meet Dara and Kira, the pride and the passion that they have for what they do is incredible. And the food that they're producing there in the Little Bear is just amazing. Urtha Minor means little bear. And you experience it yourself. They come to the table, they explain everything in great detail. And it's just food on a different level. I absolutely loved it. Loved it.
And of course, they're making the lovely sourdough bread and other different breads.
Yeah.
But they also support lots of other Northern Irish and Irish artisan producers, because they have a retail wall full of fantastic products from all corners of Ireland.
Yeah, I love that. I love the way that they buy into the theme of collaboration. And you and I both know in this industry, you will only go so far on your own. And if you want to extend the journey and be successful, then you have to collaborate. And I was delighted to see people who themselves are a real joy and a pleasure with a great business, but they're prepared to share and to offer people a space that they too can grow in, and it's lovely.
And I noticed on their social media this week that they're actually down in this neck of the woods, have gone to Kilkenny to Aron, which is award-winning bakery. They were over in the Eco Village in Clough Jordan with Joe Fitzmaurice, who is probably the king of bread making in Ireland. And it's just lovely to see them and their team out and about, because I think that is really important to go and visit other experiences. And you personally, if you didn't go and visit these food tourism experiences in Northern Ireland, well, you're not really in a position then to talk about them and to promote them and share them.
People would say to you, Sharon, what do you do in the winter, Mark? And you know, you think you lie about the house and you do nothing, you're just waiting for the season to start. But I spend the winter going around the place and meeting new people, doing new experiences, seeing who we can collaborate with, what we can do to enhance what we're already doing. I'm admiring Dara and Kira for doing the exact same, to see that they're taking the initiative and going and talking to other people. And every day is a school day when you're always meeting somebody who's teaching you something.
And what struck me very much having you as a guide was that you feel very privileged to have all this knowledge and to know all these people, and you feel that it's very much in your gift to share it with others. And I think that's something that you learned from your father-in-law.
Yeah, very much so. William John was a great mentor. He had a lovely way of introducing you to things and to people. And you're quite right. His emphasis was on the fact that, Mark, you're only the current custodian of this. So you have to cherish it. You have to protect it, and you have to look after it. And his motto always was, pay homage to your past, impact in the present day, and evolve into the future. So with that in mind, I am fully aware that I am only the current custodian. Someday I'll not be doing this, but as long as I do it, I'll do as very best as I can.
Well, you absolutely do it brilliantly. And you mentioned collaboration there. And we had a lovely Frenchman on the trip. And I believe that there is a potential collaboration with Stefan in the pipeline.
And it was not lovely. That came from left wing. A great friend of mine, Eleanor McGilley, and Peter McGahan, they approached me to say that Stefan DeLorean was interested in cooking in Ireland, and he wanted to go around and meet people and producers and establish a network of people that could become involved in this Celtic Connections tour. So the ideal time was to bring him along to the Taste Cosme event that we had last week, and he was blown away. I was blown away by the whole Taste Cosme collaboration, by the produce and the producers. And we also extended our tour. We were in Donegal, which was amazing. Castle Grove House, my God, what a property. What a force of nature Caroline is, oh my God. We were down with Tracy Jeffries and the Aids of Strength for Knock. We looked at other properties in Belfast, and the Regency stood out by a mile. So the possibilities for that are really, really exciting. And to have a man of that stature who spent so much of his time working for the famous Rick Steen, and now he wants to come to Northern Ireland and Ireland and explore and cook. It's incredible. Sometimes I pinch myself and say, is that really happening?
Well, we'd definitely be keeping an eye out for that, because Stefan has been using the hashtag Celtic Connection Tour on his social media. So that's giving us a little bit of an inkling about what we can potentially look forward to in the future. In the meantime, you have Dalriada Kingdom Tours, which is the arm where you kind of mentor and support and nurture tour guides to be as knowledgeable and as skillful as you are with guests.
Dalriada is our parent company, if you like, and that's where it began. And then, staying true to our ethos, it evolved. It simply evolved. And it evolved to an extent where we had to get help. So we worked closely with the college locally and Karen McLeod and the OCN courses. We got guides from the course. We grew a really solid, strong team. And that team now are part and parcel of our family, and very much part and parcel of our family story. And they deliver really authentic guided walking tours on the three iconic sites, Dunluce, the Giant's Causeway, and Carrigaruth. And it's lovely to have them, because without their support and without their help, we would not exist. So, and we took them from the community. It's all local people who have invested their time and their interest in what we do, and they support it 100%. So, yeah, Dalriada is establishing itself very well. And this year we're bringing our daughter into the business, which is lovely. So Chelsea will pick up the baton in a few years' time, and she'll be the fourth generation to be involved with Dalriada. So it's lovely, yeah.
But you must be so proud about that, and I'm sure your father-in-law will be so proud to know that also.
William John was a great inspiration. Unfortunately, he passed away probably before he saw Dalriada really establishing itself and being a force. But his belief in it and his belief in what we would do would be successful. And even in the early days when you're wondering, is the hassle worth your while? And he always just said, Mark, just keep your head down and guide and everything else will happen. And he was right. That's all you had to do was just guide and nourish it and mentor people, and it just happened.
And your services are so much in demand that you've had to set up another arm where you go out with those smaller groups, and that's promoted under Landmark Luxury.
Yeah, it was lovely. Again, Sharon, it evolved. It wasn't the plan, it just evolved. And I'm a great believer, if you stand still in life, people catch you up and go past you, and I'm certainly not going to stand still. So we let it evolve. The demand was there. We worked very closely with a team in Belfast at Forum, Lisa Johnson and her people. They were fantastic. They got in below the skin of what we were trying to achieve. And it was them who came up with Landmark and wrote the beautiful website that we have. And it tells the story of it really well. Landmark is all about authenticity and craftsmanship and history and heritage. And with the longevity of Rosemary's family in the industry, and this is now my 11th year guiding, we can open a few doors that other people just can't open. And we don't take that responsibility lightly. We're very respectful of that. We appreciate the opportunities. But what it means for our guests, they get behind the ropes. They get privileged information. They get to see and do things that I regard as being true experiences. And we work with a lot of wonderful people, and their mantra is that their everyday ordinary becomes extraordinary for our guests. And how nice is that?
Well, look, I can say in all honesty, it was an extraordinary experience that I had as one of the guests on your tour, Mark, and I really, really enjoyed it. Of course, I'm totally biased about that part of the country, and I would urge anybody that's thinking about going to Northern Ireland to just do it and do it this summer, because it is well worth the visit. And thank you so much for talking to me today about it, and best of luck for a very busy summer season.
Sharon, thank you very much. I mean that very sincerely. And there's an open-armed invitation for you to come back and sing to me anytime.
Oh no, what happens in tour stays on the tour part.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you very much indeed. I thoroughly appreciate it. It was lovely to meet you, and I'm really delighted you gave me this opportunity as well. So thank you very sincerely.
You're listening to The Best Possible Taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
My name is Simon from Dunluce Distillery. We're based in Port Ballantrae on the north coast of Northern Ireland. And I guess what we're most known for is our gin, the Shoreborn Gin, which was the first to launch on the Causeway Coast. And since then, we have developed a limoncello made from Sorrento lemons that I import directly from Italy and peel by hand. It's a wonderful, wonderful, versatile spirit. And then I guess after that, our next progression was arancello, which is made with orange peel, and it's very refreshing and a lovely zingy flavour. Since then, we have recently launched our new cold brew coffee liqueur in collaboration with Causeway Coffee. They're fellow members of Taste Causeway, which is a wonderful group, and I get so much inspiration from my fellow members there. It's great just to collaborate with them and hear new ideas, and it gives me a few ideas to be going on with whenever I'm launching a new product. If you're interested in finding out more about my story, please go to dunlucedistillery.com and also check me out on Facebook, Dunluce Distillery, and on Instagram at Dunluce Distillery.
Cheers.
Chin chin.
Salut.
Schleunter.
Welcome back to The Best Possible Taste, Ireland's longest-running food and drink radio show and podcast. I'm Sharon Noonan, and you just heard Simon Hogg from Dunluce Distillery, as tonight's show is a celebration of Taste Causeway, an All-Ireland Foodie Destination Award winner and an accredited slow food destination in Northern Ireland. And my next guest is not only a food producer in the region, but also curates unique dining experiences. So let's find out more from Musselburn Sea Salt's Claire O'Kane.
Bon appetit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious. Mmm.
Claire, it's absolutely brilliant to have you on the show today, because a couple of weeks ago, whenever I was up on the North Antrim Coast, I met you, And you told me a bit about your business, but I also met you at one of the experiences that you offer. So let's start first with Muzzenden Sea Salt. Tell me a bit about it and how it all started.
Thanks, Sharon, for having me today. Yes, yeah, so Muzzenden Sea Salt, I like to describe as the happy accident. So for me, I have a background as a psychologist and customer service. So that was my field. And I happened to be doing a product range called Honora Cain. And Honora Cain means honest warrior. So my background was always helping people to come into their own power and confidence and things like that. And I discovered for this particular fair that I needed a product from Northern Ireland. So as a sea salt based product, it was included Epsom salts and a combination of salts, but I had nothing from Northern Ireland. So I began to research, first of all, sea salt in Northern Ireland to see if I could find a producer. And hence there was no producers in Northern Ireland. So I became the first to produce sea salt in Northern Ireland from ancient times. So we've one of the oldest pans here in Ballycastle at Pans Rock, and I began to produce it. So what started off as my granny's saucepan and a 2 litre bottle of water from the beach has turned into what we have now as the brand Muzzenden Sea Salt. And that's how we began.
It's amazing that nobody else had done it in Northern Ireland, because there's a number of them in down here in the Republic of Ireland. So, you know, congratulations on having the foresight to be the number one. That's absolutely brilliant. Tell me about your process then. You started with a 2 litre bottle. I presume you don't go down with little bottles to the seashore.
No. No, but what was brilliant over, if you can describe anything over that COVID, was we had a time to slow down. And I remember it was a time of going to the beach, and it was like my daily ritual of how the sea had always helped me in my own personal conditions that I would have health-wise. So when I look back, it was a natural, it was very obvious to me as to why I didn't produce sea salt. But for us, the production will always be by hand. And that's thanks to having our belief and values is to have zero impact on the sea. And we can't do that when we pump or you know, bring in any other way. So we will always hand harvest, and we will continue to do so. And we've built a model now which will allow us to hand harvest, but to scale within, you know, sea salt's an $18 billion industry. So what will happen will help us is we will be able to maintain our beliefs, our integrity, and still be able to keep those things, thanks to just taking our time and building our process. So it's all by hand, and it's all naturally processed. So you won't get the perfect flake from Muzzenden Sea Salt, but we believe that's a small price to pay for nature producing the sea salt into perfectly imperfect, you know.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Ballycastle there. You've gone with the name Muzzenden. So tell us about the significance of the name.
The significance is Muzzenden Temple, which is actually an 18th century library here on the north coast. So it's one of Northern Ireland's most iconic, and I think it's the most second in a poll photographed building in the whole of Ireland. So it was always my place of peace. It was always, no matter where I went in the world or no matter what I was going through, the minute I just saw Muzzenden Temple or stood on those stood on the cliff edge with the, you know, the wind coming in, and it was always that place where I could take a breath. So whenever I began to harvest Muzzenden Sea Salt, it was around Muzzenden Temple. So for me, it was that natural progression into calling it Muzzenden Temple, because it was somewhere special that I held. And also when I look back, my parents, you know, had a couple of summers. They had a takeaway quite close to Muzzenden Temple. So I'd have spent summers and they would have occupied us at the beach. You know, we would have spent summers on the beach, or they would have drove past it and told us stories about it just to keep us occupied in the car, we look back on. But that name was always there, I should say.
I grew up in Ballymena. So if we were going to the seaside, it would have been to Portrush, Port Stewart. You know, we went to the Giant's Causeway, the Bush Mills Inn, the Carrickarreed Rope Bridge. Those were the sorts of places that we went on days out in the summer. And whenever you say about Muzzenden Temple being a really iconic building, and it is used in all the Discover Northern Ireland promotional material, videos online. And I had seen it a million times on the TV or in brochures, but I'd never actually visited it. And to be honest, I didn't really know where it was. And it is, it's a National Trust property.
Yes, it's a National Trust property. And the National Trust, the reason why is because they used to open it, but as you can imagine, it's right on the cliff, Sharon. So, you know, we have to look after that building because it's important to keep it. So it is a closed building. And that's another progression for us as Musselden Seaside. As a local producer, we actually have an exclusivity with Musselden Temple now to do dining experiences inside. So we hold that exclusivity. So it's a wonderful progress for us to be able to, you know, go inside. So we're one of the few, and they will open in World Heritage Days, and they do open for concerts or events like myself with a Taste of Musselden.
Well, just to explain to listeners that might not be familiar with what the National Trust is, or equivalent down south would be something like the Office of Public Works. So they have a responsibility to take care of these heritage sites. And that means, and no offence to anybody listening that might be OPW or National Trust, sometimes it can be quite challenging to get them to understand when you're trying to do something because they're so protective of a site. So tell me about the process of bringing your experiences to the temple, because like it's a beautiful dome shape, and we must ask you in a minute about the history of it. It's not a particularly big space, but it's not teeny tiny, but to do events in it, it can only hold a limited amount of people. So then when you're talking about doing a dining experience in it, where there's no toilet facilities, there's no kitchen, there's no table and chairs in it all the time. So, you know, there was a lot of work must have gone on behind the scenes, discussions with the National Trust to bring them along with this concept that you had.
Yes. Well, first of all, the National Trust is changing their processes, but I've never experienced anything other than a partnership with them from the very beginning. So for me, that partnership began with this idea, which the first time that they heard of. So I might not be the right particular approach for this, because my progression with them was a natural progression. So the National Trust to me was a partnership from the beginning. We had met with the team at Musselden Temple, and I shared my ideas. And the first time we shared this idea with them, they were just like, yes. And yes, there is a lot of different rules and regulations, but this is an 18th century library. It's the most iconic. And let's not forget, every single site that the OPW or National Trust have has historical significance. So you can understand, yes, maybe they're not open to be able to hosting these events and things, but they are changing and they have a real purpose behind what they're doing. So instead of looking at it as kind of restrictive, I've always looked at it as, you know, I go into the National Trust property, I get to do a dining experience in Musselden Temple. And you kind of mentioned there's no electricity or all of these things. Yes, those are true. But what we have done is created a magical luxury experience that can be for your average everyday listener, right through to whatever budget that's involved. And we do that by attention to detail. So we do have toilets. We have a lovely luxury car that takes us from the toilet right up to the steps of Musselden Temple. And that car is fully electric, so we're sustainable. We have a kitchen inside, so that chef comes into that kitchen, to that space, and cooks inside. Eva, our last chef, is actually a lady who did the Sligo Food Trail, and Eva is fantastic chef. So she's cooking in there. So it's just using your imagination and creativity to be able to transform a space. And that's one of the biggest passions that I have, is to be able to repurpose space about land. And it's be able to use it. So we have a number of locations all over the Causeway and Ireland that we do these experiences in. And it's just to repurpose that. But to go back to your question, Sharon, for us, the event of A Taste of Mudston was one of the first events within the National Trust that began to bring in that relationship of reusing and repurpose. So I believe the lady in the team that was working alongside with me, Niamh, they now look at A Taste of Mudston as the kind of pilot experience and learn from that experience. So we created something completely different in Mudston Temple. But I think the main focus of how I became a partner of the National Trust was that my business is sustainable, it has a purpose, and it's not just offsetting, it's not just using this lingo of sustainability or, you know, embracing all these things that become very popular now. To us, it's our ethos. So for us, it was about a community and using this. And that's how we began. So our experiences, yes, you can have four international guests having a luxury experience inside. But you also can have, you know, we have engagements there, we have locals. It was so important for us to have the local demographic in terms of North Coast, Ireland. You know, that was so important for us because this building is so iconic. It becomes part of people's lives. It's where my sister had, you know, everybody's story is the same. My grandfather grew less than 3 miles away. Go back into our ancestors of the O'Cattons. They would have potentially, you know, had that land in the, you know, the 16th. So there's so much that becomes with this. So there becomes a responsibility. So I suppose I can appreciate the National Trust reluctance or the OPW's reluctance to allow these because they have to be protected. And it has to be the right particular thing that will, you know, share that story of Mudston Temple.
Well, to come back then to the chef, so you build this sort of kitchen inside the temple so that the chef has the facilities that he needs. So I suppose if you imagine a restaurant with an open kitchen that you can see them cooking, there's a bit of that. But there are restrictions on what they can make and what you can serve. For example, no red wine.
For those 2 hours, red wine is not a big thing, or beetroot, do you know? So when you look at it, you know, it's 4,000 pounds a tile, and these tiles is from the 18th century. You know, when people realise and you tell the story, and when you're watching the sunset, which we have done for the last number of years of the summer solstice, and you're sitting in one of the most northerns, and, you know, all you have is the sunset and the sea. Red wine doesn't even come into it. Types of food that we have, you don't even miss it. I mean, we have all local food. It's a la carte to begin with. But what's amazing is we try and be as personal to the people that's coming as possible. We don't put our menu up. We put a surprise. But we also have a particular approach that the chef will do everything they possibly can to cater for their tastes and their needs. And that's the big thing. So we actually had one event where the chef, unbeknownst to myself, decided he would do the whole meal vegan. So all the people that was inside Mudston Temple, you know, they had meat substitute. They had all of these things they didn't know. And I didn't actually know until the morning of it. So I was like, oh, this is a risk. I'm not sure I would have. It was fantastic because the food was so delicious that it didn't matter. Do you know? And that's the difference. So it's like you can look at restrictions, red wine, beetroot, tea or coffee. But when you're in there, it's the magic of the experience of it and the taste of the food, you know. And another thing we do is compostable plates, which people just don't. It was actually from Paula, first experience. And one of the things is compostable plates. And we've had one person say, I would rather, I think it's not a good look. And I says, okay, that's interesting. We would rather do good than look good. And we do look good. And that's the difference because that was just someone's approach to it. It's all over there. So we have a real responsibility. And you say about the kitchen, we have a perfectly operating kitchen, but it takes a skillful chef. So not everybody can cook in Mudston Temple and not everybody has that, you know, skill to be able to do it. But for us, Eva, she's fantastic at the moment for us and she'll be our summer, our resident chef this summer.
Tell me a bit about the history before we finish up about, you know, why Musselburgh ended up there, who built it, why they built it, because I'm sure the listeners are interested in its background, because you've talked a bit about its history and being a library and from the 18th century and the very, very expensive tiles that are on the floor in it.
So the Earl built it as a library, and he built it, initially he began to build it with a roof observatory up into the stars, but he decided along the way, I suppose the best thing is saying that Bishop, he was an eccentric character. He used to host these dining experiences also inside Downhill Castle as well. So for me, it's like that history comes alive in the experiences the minute you bring a concert in. So it was built as a library, really. They do have all these stories of built for his niece and different things. For me, it was built, because he had that extravagance, he could. And he built something at the edge of the cliff in the 18th century. So that takes someone who has a lot of creativity, insights, and slightly, he was ahead of his time. One of the things that we learned recently was as the famine ships was going out, so this is it, he was bringing back red wood to build a bridge in Derry, Londonderry. So, you know, he had real foresight. He built the first road into. So I suppose the Earl Bishop Hervey, I think he deserves, you know, like a bit of the talk rather than the building itself, because he created that one building, but he also created, you know, Downhill Castle, and he also did a lot for the area. And I suppose one of the biggest things that we learned from that is he was just eccentric, I think. And it takes creativity. And I think that comes through now. So, you know, we look at the experiences that we have inside and it's just an amazing experience that we have. And it's allowed us to be able to become one of the top luxury providers, you know, for travel experiences in the whole of Ireland as well at the moment too. So, you know, it's an amazing experience, an amazing location.
Well, you talk about the Earl deserving a lot of credit, Claire. I think you deserve a lot of credit for carrying on his legacy in some respects, because it is such an impressive experience that you've worked very hard to create and get off the ground. And I feel I was very privileged to visit the temple on the trip there. So thanks so much for hosting me a couple of weeks ago, and congratulations on such a wonderful experience, and best of luck for the summer season ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us, Sharon. It was a pleasure to share it with you. And for anybody who wants to find out more, you can find some details on Musselburgh Sea Salt website. So that's Musselburgh, Musselburgh, seasalt.com.
You're listening to The Best Possible Taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hi there, my name is Silke and I have a made-to-order bakery called Culture Bakehouse based here in Coleraine, Northern Ireland. We specialize in fully free from allergy-friendly foods. And when I say free from, I mean free from the 14 most known allergens out there. In other words, because our foods and our bakes are free from, our bakes, our products are vegan, gluten-free, nut-free, soy-free, mustard-free, celery-free, and again, free from the 14 most known allergens out there, making us the first and so far the only bakery in Northern Ireland offering this service. Our customers absolutely love everything in our bakery, everything that we have to offer, especially our allergy-friendly sourdough breads and our brownies, but they're also interested in our cakes and pies and pavlovas. In our experience, what they love the most is the inclusivity at the food table that our products bring, because they know that not only their dietary needs are covered, but that the rest of the family and friends are going to be eating foods that are not only delicious, but good for everyone. So follow us on our social media, and which is Facebook and Instagram, at Culture Bakehouse, or go to our website, which is culturebakehouse.com.
Bon appetit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious. Mmm.
Welcome back to The Best Possible Taste, Ireland's longest running food and drink radio show and podcast. I'm Sharon Noonan, and you just heard Zilda from the Cultured Bakehouse, as tonight's show is a celebration of Taste Causeway an All-Ireland Foodie Destination Award winner and an accredited slow food destination in Northern Ireland. And our final guest this evening is Charlotte Dixon, owner of the very unique Elephant Rock Hotel in Portrush.
Bon appetit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious. Mmm.
Charlotte, you're very welcome to the programme. I had a lovely stay in your hotel, Elephant Rock, in Portrush a few weeks ago. And when I was there, we had a very short chat and I discovered that your background isn't in hotel and catering, it's actually in chemistry. So tell me how you made the transition from being a scientist to a hotelier.
Thank you so much, Sharon, and it was lovely to have you stay, and thank you for inviting me on and giving me the opportunity, you know, to talk about the hotel. I'd say it's not, you know, a straightforward answer. I obviously went to university, I did chemistry, loved it at the time. I got the opportunity. I was doing my master's project with a guy on batteries, and he had some money to do a PhD, so I stayed on and did that. And then when I was finished that, I went into publishing. So it was like academic publishing, scientific publishing. Moved down to Manchester, and then COVID happened. And I moved home to be with my mum. My mum lives on her own, and it was just sort of that time where we were all a wee bit worried, didn't know how it was going to go. And I didn't want her to be on her own. And then kind of got another appreciation for being back. I'm from Port Stewart, so just the town next to where the hotel's located, and got a new appreciation for the area after being away for, you know, 10, 12 years. And we heard, someone told us about the building coming on sale, and we had no intention, really. I mean, they kept pushing us about it, and we were like, this is ludicrous. We've never expressed an interest in opening a hotel. But we went to see it. We were worn down a little bit, went to see the building, and just saw a ton of potential, really. And it kind of went round 30 minutes sort of to view it, and we were both sort of fell in love, decided we were going to put in an offer and hopefully be successful. And that's how we got into it.
So the building is on the seafront. It's a Victorian building, and it was a respite centre for...
It was army veterans, so it was the British Legion that ran it, sort of run as a charity, and you could come, you got 2 weeks a year basically that you could come down and stay. It wasn't a hotel, but it was set up as close as possible to one, so it was sort of set up all rooms with en suites and things like that.
No disrespect to the army, but it certainly doesn't show any of the signs of being a respite centre now. Like, the decor is so bold and modern and fabulous. And, you know, the room I was in was a beautiful, spacious room. So structurally, was it in very good condition? So it was just decorative work that you had to do? Or whenever you went in, was there substantial work had to be done to it?
The outside is a sort of Victorian terrace, and you don't really get the scale of it until you're in the building. It goes back quite a bit. There's a big central atrium, and that was all already there. So that made the perfect reception. And the bedrooms are all, you know, sort of unique, but that helps us in a way with our boutique style. So every room's, you know, slightly different. We added on 4 bedrooms, so that was probably the biggest structural work that we did. We added on 4 rooms in the middle 2 floors just to get the hotel status, because we wanted to, you know, it to be run as a hotel. So yeah, it wasn't a mad structural undertaking. The building was in really great condition. It really was more superficial that we did. So we've redone, you know, every, you know, floor, wall, designed the bar and things like that, and that was such a joy, because, you know, that's something mum and I just love, we're really interested in.
Well, I was going to ask you about the interior design, and you're saying about all the rooms are very unique and individual, they're all decorated in different styles. Was this something that you and your mum really enjoyed doing?
Yes, so mum's just obsessed with changing even one small thing in her house. She's always got a plan to do something. So I grew up around that, and, you know, my mum's very bold with colour, pattern. She just loves anything different. And we were friendly with the designer for, I think we've been friendly with Adrian, for mum, probably 2 decades. And he's got really similar style to us. And, I wanted it to be with, we wanted it to be with the Victorian building. Obviously, it's got, the history. But I think we've kind of managed to create something that's timeless. So it's still quite modern, but it's bold, but without aging. Hopefully, I think it'll be quite a, a nice timeless design, a bit art deco. So yeah, it's definitely something that people, when they come across us on the internet, I think they're, you either love it or you hate it, but it definitely stands out and it's a bit of a wow point.
And the facade is, it's like a bright pink and a very dark grey. So it definitely does stand out, as does the name Elephant Rock, which there is a very logical explanation for the name that listeners probably won't be familiar with. So just tell us where you got the name.
Yep, of course. Yeah, so nobody understands the name Sharon, actually, even locals. A lot of locals don't know about it. So I get this a lot, but I was looking, just reading about the local area, and trying to get some inspiration. Wanted something different, just wanted that one thing that sort of stood out, your like eureka moment. Because I felt like it was a really important part, of the identity. It was like once you have your name and you can change it, but it's there. I read about things like there's, the Skerries Islands that we look out on. I thought it'd be great to name it after something there, but there was like Devil's Washtub, and I thought sounds a bit too dark. Doesn't sound restful. So I came across the Elephant Rock. So it's actually an old lava formation, a bit, like the Giant's Causeway would have been formed. And it's just off the coast of Ballantoy. So Ballantoy going towards White Park Bay. And it's beautiful. And we have a painting as you come in. So a lot of people notice the painting, but they still want to know a little bit more about where it is. So it's about 15 miles up the coast.
And it looks like an elephant.
Yes, it really does. It looks very like an elephant.
So let's talk a bit about the menu, because I had the breakfast on the 2 mornings that I was there, and I was delighted to see some local suppliers name checked on the breakfast menu. So is that something that you're very much committed to, using local suppliers?
Yes, definitely. Obviously, Sharon, from a sustainability point of view, you want to, support the local community, and we're very lucky in the area that we are. And you'll know, from your trip, a couple of weeks ago, that we've got fantastic suppliers on our doorstep, so it makes it so easy, to go that way. We have a great coffee supplier, Causeway Coffee. They're based in Coleraine. Two lovely guys, interesting guys, the way they came about their business, really nice story. And we get so many great comments on it. So it's so lovely to be able to, support them, and the great products they use. We've got Moyle Tremoyle. So Mo is our head chef, really brilliant, talented. So I kind of do stay out of the kitchen, because I'm a vegetarian. But I would say one of the places I have a bit more influence is the suppliers we choose. So it was actually Paula McIntyre, local celebrity chef. She put me on to Moyle Tremoyle's, a great local family based outside Garva. And it's, grass-fed, really well looked after cattle. The minimum, the hang for 28 days, the meat. So it's all really good. Great comments on our steak. So yeah, we really do enjoy. We get our prawns from Port of Ogie, scallops from Kilkeel. So we're obviously near, close by to all this, wonderful fresh fish. So we do try to use local suppliers as well for that.
And of course, like Portrush is quite a seasonal seaside town, so it's important to look after the locals and have something on offer for the locals. And I know you do various different events throughout the year.
Yes, definitely. So we would run, we have a very popular, speaking of the Moyle Tremoyle, we would do a steak night every Thursday. So we try to do that, really great value. And the locals really love that, and it gets, sometimes great to give people a reason to come in or to choose a certain night. And then we've also got in April coming up, which we're very excited about. We've got a special wine dinner. So it's a 6-course tasty menu, with wine pairing. So menu that Mo, the head chef's designed. But it's in conjunction with a lovely Bordeaux winery that we stock some of their wines called Maison Sichel. And Rob Wine Brothers, who are a local wine merchant that we would get a lot of our wines from. So they'll do talks on, the provenance and the story behind all the wines, and there'll be brilliant food pairings. So the food's all designed obviously to complement the wine. So I think that'll be a great night. So that's coming up mid-April, and it's on, now on our website.
And then I've seen that you also do things like afternoon tea, and for Mother's Day, you had a nice event as well.
Yes, we do like to, do different themes on the afternoon tea for special occasions. We had a great one. It was Paddy McGuigan, who's like quite a famous makeup artist. He was up a couple of weeks ago, and it was sort of an over 40s like makeup day. He sort of tried to specialize. He does special days, on certain types of makeup, and that was a fantastic afternoon because all the ladies there were just loving it. He was doing great, and it helps, promote the hotel, to different people, and give people a reason to come in and something fun to do, a feel good afternoon. So we do try and, put little interesting things on through the year and in the off season as well, to give people a reason to come up, because Portrush is still a beautiful place, in the winter. And we do get a lot of, return guests who really love it in that time because it is a wee bit quieter and it's not, the crowds. So yeah, we do try to keep things interesting through the year.
You must find it a huge change, Charlotte, to what you were doing before. What is the biggest change for you in terms of your day-to-day life?
I would say managing people. I've never been a manager. I would say that was one of the hardest things to do. Especially maybe as a woman, I felt sometimes I should change myself or be less friendly, to maybe get that respect that you might, want or need. But
Sorry to cut across you
yeah.
there, but obviously people can't see you, and I think we should add on to that you're extremely young as well. I hope you don't mind me saying that, like you're only in your early 30s.
Yes. And that mentality, I think, is also, partly I have that in my head as well. So, you are sort of aware of that. And I think that was the toughest transition. It kind of broke my heart at the start to learn how to, navigate that and lead a team. And also you want to, bring them on with you because your staff are such an important asset, and we're really lucky. We have fantastic staff, all a joy to work with. It's a lovely time at the hotel at the minute. But with it being such a service heavy industry, if your staff don't buy into what you're doing, I think it shows to the guests. So we have a really, it's a nice, feeling and atmosphere in the hotel, and a lot of the guests comment on it. And I think, learning how to do that and hopefully foster that is was sort of an important learning curve.
I would like to compliment you on your staff, because everybody that I met, from the night porter Matthew to your general manager Joanne, everybody was absolutely fabulous. So friendly, smiley, no resting bitchy faces, which you can get sometimes whenever you're visiting somewhere. And you yourself, a lovely touch, coming down and talking to guests at breakfast to ask them if they sleep well and all of that. So I had a wonderful day, I have to say, and I really enjoyed it. I want to congratulate you on everything you and your mother have done. I think it's incredible, and I'd be watching with interest how your business blooms and blossoms. What is your vision for the hotel moving into the future?
I would, just love us to go from strength to strength, just get busier every year. We achieved in our first year the 4 stars, grading, which we'd been hoping for. So I think I'd maybe like to try and go something after, an AA grading, another sort of quality marker for the hotel, and just to keep having happy customers and welcoming people back. As I say, that's, the big aim and the big joy. So, and you never know if there's another elephant-shaped rock somewhere, I might be tempted. I'm always on the lookout.
And in terms of awards, you have a Georgina Campbell plaque. You're in Georgina's Guide, which is a very prestigious guide to be in.
Yes, and amazing to get that recognition, obviously, from Georgina. And we had Georgina stay actually recently, and I hope she wouldn't mind me saying, but she wrote us a lovely email just to say, how much she enjoyed it and the breakfast and everything like that, and the quality of the hotel. So all of that means so much because obviously she is in so many places and sees so many things, and we're coming from somewhere where we've not done this before, and you can only hope, that you're hitting a level where you're able to compare and impress people like Georgina. So yeah, it was fantastic to be included in her guide and a real big boost to the business. And it's a lovely plaque to have at the front.
Great plaque to have. And look, I've loved talking to you. It was great talking to you and meeting you in the hotel, and it is so impressive. So congratulations again, and I'll be keeping my eye out now for the next opening somewhere else in Northern Ireland, or maybe further afield. You never know, this could be the first of a chain of Elephant Rock boutique hotels. Thanks a million, Charlotte.
Thank you so much, Sharon, and thank you so much for your time today and giving me this opportunity. And if anybody would like to find out more or to see a bit more of what we do, our website is elephantrockhotel.co.uk, and we're on Facebook and Instagram, so the handle's just Elephant Rock Hotel for both.
Bon appétit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious.
And that brings us to the end of tonight's show. Thanks to everyone in Taste Causeway who facilitated my recent visit, and to tonight's guests, Mark Rogers, Claire O'Kane, and Charlotte Dixon. Until next week, bon appétit.
Do you want to get in touch with the best possible taste? Do you want to come on, share a recipe, review a cookery book, or just have a general chat about what you like to eat and drink? All you have to do is get in touch with me, Sharon Noonan, by sending an email to s.noonan@live.ie or send me a tweet @queenoforg. Bon appétit!